All right. That was great. Have a cup of tea.
One of my personal favorites.
I can't believe they wrote that song just for you.
I know. Who would have known?
That was so sweet. All right. So I'm in the studio with Giuseppe, who's here in Hot Springs in Edna Lou, the T-Bus. And I don't know, maybe you folks have seen the bus around. It's been an afternoon at Red Light Roastery.
Yep. Just the day before yesterday.
Have you served anywhere else in town?
I served downtown once or twice. I've been here, actually. Served tea here maybe a little over a year and a half ago as well.
Right, okay. I missed you then, but I did hear about it. That's how I initially heard about you.
Yeah.
Through the good book, the Facebook. So you came back to Hot Springs. You've been on a southern tour, I've seen on your blog, which is the Free Tea Party.
Yeah. Freeteaparty.org is my website. I just finished up a 3-month tour through the South, serving free tea. I've actually been on the road for 11 years now making tea for free. A couple years in a pickup truck, and the last 9 years has been in my short school bus. Her name is Edna Lou. And I've just been making tea for free for people because I found that when you take money out of interactions, it makes those interactions much more genuine. So it's kind of a community building project sorts.
I bet it's hard to explain that to people. I bet when you roll up and you're like, I'm just going to make tea and people can have it and I'm going to park on this city street. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a little easier to describe it when you're sitting, when the bus is there. When I'm here on the radio talking to you guys, or I'm telling someone in person and they haven't seen the bus,
right,
it's a little bit harder to comprehend. The experience is, I think, speaks for itself. So actually being there and participating, it's something that is so innately human, this idea of sharing with people and having non-monetary interactions, having interactions that aren't one-for-one, like using money or barter, that so many people, when they have that experience, it just feels right because it is so human. And you know, non-calculated exchange is what I call it, or traditional human economy. It's what we do with our friends and our family. It's
right.
It's gift giving. It's Christmas. It's buying your friend a drink at the bar, whatever it is.
Right. There's no limits there.
Yeah.
You know, when you're with your family, there's nothing you wouldn't do. So, yeah.
I guess I'm just out to create a new story and a new myth, which is that that we can actually do that with strangers, which is super radical.
That is radical. That's good. That's great. Shoot, I had a question. Oh, I was going to say that I have the phone on in here. If anyone has a question for Giuseppe, you could call at 627-0711 here at KUHS, and I'll put you on the air. We can talk about things if anyone is in fact listening.
Is anyone out there?
Hello. So you're here in Hot Springs. I'm so honored you came back through Hot Springs. I understand you're writing a book.
Yeah. So one of the most asked about elements of the Free Tea Bus is are a lot of the technical things that have to do with the bus. The bus, I think a lot of people are interested because the bus itself reflects traditional human economy in the sense that in traditional human economy, relationships were the highest form of economy. And that's both relationships with people as well as the things we use and consume. So the T-Bus kind of is the physical representation of a lot of this relationship-based economy of traditional human economy, which is having direct relationships with the things you use. So, you know, I built my shelter, the bus. I've lived in the bus for 9 years using mostly salvaged materials. The bus runs on recycled vegetable oil, which I get from restaurants. It's a waste product from deep fryers. And those, again, is relationships, building relationships with restaurant owners and having a relationship with the fuel. I'm filtering and dewatering it and centrifuging it on the road. It's got solar power, which is, you know, harnessing energy from the sun, a solar-powered refrigerator. I've got a wood stove for heat, so I have that relationship with the wood. The sink is heated by waste engine heat and waste solar power. So also placing objects in relationship with each other. And the bed's on a pulley system. It lowers down from the ceiling. So there's all these projects and elements to the T-Bus that so many people were asking me questions about, and I just started copying and pasting out of like a document to answer these, you know, curious people's questions on the internet and online. And I decided, I said, well, why not just put that into a book and give it away? So here I am. That's what I'm doing here. I worked on it last winter in North Carolina, and I'm working on this book here right now in Hot Springs. It's called the T-Bus Factory Service Manual, and it's a guide for small-scale, off-grid, reclaimed DIY and mobile living systems. So yeah, talking about water systems and alternative fuels and small-scale electrical systems, DC wiring, and then salvaging and reclaiming things. You know, what to know, all the different kinds of PECs and PECs fittings, and how do you, and tools to remove stuff, you know, getting people, and maybe it's a little geeky for some of you guys out there listening, but it's something I love.
Oh, that's great. And the magic will be is you'll never know who you'll inspire to, you know, who's listening, who wants to do something like this, but thinks it might be impossible, or maybe they've tried to explain it to their family and everyone kind of just goes cross-eyed, yeah. Like, huh? Why would you want to do that?
Well, it's hard to imagine a world where you don't just pull up to a gas station and pump your fuel, or where, you know, you aren't connected with wires and pipes to, you know, the grid.
I have to say that I think when traveling, it can be extremely lonely, in my opinion, to travel into a town when your only job is to consume.
Yeah.
Because you don't really have an excuse to meet people. And so that makes me feel incredibly lonely.
Yeah.
And so I love the idea of having business to attend to, even though it's, you know, you could see it as extraneous, but like you have to find vegetable oil to move on, and you've got to find some wood for your stove and a place to serve some tea. And
yeah. Well, and that's the cool thing is that it's all, this whole kind of thing is based around genuine human interactions, meeting people, finding your resources, having, you know, something beyond, just, you know, I started serving tea because I was living in Los Angeles and working full-time as a video editor, but living in my pickup truck, and all of my interactions with people revolved around profit maximization. It was me going to the grocery store. I was trying to get as much food as I could, and they were trying to get as much money as they could. Or I go to the bar, and my interactions with strangers were girls coming up to me, hey, you want to buy me a drink? Which is like the least genuine human interaction you can have. And so, and I think that oftentimes we just think that that's kind of the way it is, and you're supposed to act out of self-interest, and that's the function of human interaction, because that's what we're taught. That's actually what the father of modern day economics teaches us. He says that, quote, man's self-interest is God's providence. Like, not only are we innately greedy, but that this is our destiny given to us by God. Which I have a little issue with. So I do think that there is something to be said for that, for creating relationships, and for the sake of being genuine. Because I don't really think that it's just all about take in the world. And that's kind of what we've been set up with.
We all have relationships where that gets off kilter and that leads to so much pain.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting lit up on my phone over here from a listener named Clayton, who's wondering where you go next.
Oh, that's a good question, Clayton. So I'm actually getting on a passenger train and heading west on Sunday for like 2 months.
Oh, wow.
To go see my brother's new baby. And
excellent. Where's that?
That's in Northern California. Okay. And then I have one of my best friends is getting married, and I'm a groomsman. And then my partner, Allie, who travels with me half the time, she's out west as well with her van that she's...
right. Yeah, your two-van family.
Yeah, we've got two vans. and then coming back here to Hot Springs for, I don't know, maybe a month in the spring in late April and May. So anyone who's out there, really, if you're interested and curious, I encourage you to get onto Facebook, if you're on Facebook, and find Edna Lou, the Tea Bus, which is Facebook.com/freeteaparty, or check out freeteaparty.org, which is my website, and that links to Facebook and Instagram. If you're around Hot Springs, I hope in April and May to be serving some tea around town. And then from there, I'm not really sure. Allie's coming back this way with me, and we're going to
Will you drive in her van back to Hot Springs?
We're going to leave her van at West.
Okay, and take the train back.
Yep. And we've been talking about doing a Mississippi River tour, so heading up the Mississippi.
It's a great idea.
But we'll see. Yeah, sorry, Clayton, I can't. My plans are oftentimes not as concrete as.
Well, I saw on your blog that when you came through and you spent a couple days in Little Rock already, so that would actually be kind of backtracking for at least for this trip, right?
Oh, Little Rock?
Didn't you say you would?
Yeah, I spent a couple days in Little Rock. I actually didn't really serve tea there. It was kind of weird. The first thing I showed up into town, and the first thing I happened was like a big fight right next to my bus with people like tasing each other, and it was crazy.
Tasing?
Tasing.
Wow. Was this downtown?
It was downtown.
Little Rock?
Yeah. Oh. But I would actually like to explore Little Rock as well a little bit.
Yeah. Little Rock's really, there's a lot happening there. There's a lot of pedestrian walkways now that, like, even when we moved here 13 years ago, really weren't in place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that could be fun. Maybe Clayton wants to help you host your event in Little Rock.
And also folks can sign up from, I have a regional email list on my website. So that's a really good way to be in touch too. I let people know when I'm in their state or their region.
Oh, that's great.
Serving tea.
Yeah. All right. He calls you Mr. T.
T-E-A or just the letter T?
Just Mr. T.
Okay.
I pity the fool.
I get that a lot. Mr. T or T-Sippy. Or
T-Sippy.
Or just Steepy. Or T-Sips. I don't know.
So you grew up in Washington State.
Yep, I grew up on an island called San Juan Island in Northwest Washington State, practically Canada. All of our television channels were Canadian, all five of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So was it metric? Did you guys have to use metric out there? Were you so close that sometimes your rulers would just switch over?
Yeah, no. No.
That was me with the taser. I don't know, Clayton. You might just have to call Clayton. I'm gonna stop looking at my phone now. This is distracting. On your tour through the South, I saw you went through Floyd, Virginia, which is a.
Have you been there?
I have been there.
Yeah.
We played an open mic night there. We were in Blacksburg with some friends, and we camped out at their farm for a couple weeks and played in Floyd, and it was. What a town. What a strange place.
Floyd is such an interesting place. You know, I literally did not know I was going to go to Floyd, Virginia on my tour. I actually didn't really know where I was going to go really at all.
Uh-huh.
I had some ideas, but I drove the Blue Ridge Parkway from where it starts in Virginia down to Asheville, North Carolina. And I just randomly ended up in Floyd, and I thought when I first showed up, I thought I was gonna be there for like maybe a day or two, the weekend or something, and I ended up there for like 8 days, and I absolutely was blown away by the hospitality and the community that was there. I would have to say, you know, I've been a lot of places in the last 11 years of living on the road, and Floyd, Virginia is you know, definitely in the top five of most kind and generous and welcoming.
Right. And there's really not much to even see in the town.
Yeah. Well, there's the country store. It's called the Floyd Country Store.
If I remember right, it's like there's like a flashing four-way stop. Like, yeah. That's it. There's not a traffic tiny. Light.
But a lot of what's happening is happening out in different, there's different communities spread out. There's different schools and spaces and farms and homesteads and things that are, you know, it's not as central, but you know, every Friday year round there's live music at downtown, and in the summer months it spills out into the streets, and they've literally built into the infrastructure of downtown like all these spaces for people to jam and play music. So
there's a town in Arkansas that you should check out when you're here, Mountain View. I think
isn't there both of those in Arkansas?
There are both of them, and right now I'm having. I'm forgetting.
I'll go to both. I'll try to figure out which one.
One of them has some caves nearby where you can camp out, and then there's a town square, and it is it's a crazy thing. It's like bluegrass groups, just, you know, one after the next.
Cool.
Five or six people getting together, just playing music.
Yeah.
And it's anyway.
Well, music is one of those things. Just like tea, like, you know, tea is used all over the world millions of times every day for free as a community building project, as a way to connect people. And I think that music is also one of those extremely powerful things, especially when it's jam circles and sessions and spaces where it's super participatory.
Yeah.
And I grew up going to various kind of music campouts and festivals around the Pacific Northwest that all revolved around jamming. I mean, that was the main focus of them all. It wasn't necessarily to go see, you know, live music on stage. It was a very participatory thing. So,
and right.
I think that that's honestly those kinds of activities where it's non-commercial and it's participatory and it's, you know, you're creating something beautiful, a beautiful interaction. I think we ought to place, you know, great value in those things.
I think people crave that. I do. I appreciate that a lot, what you're saying. Because to go, like I say, to just go and be a consumer, you feel like you're being duped on some level, you know, pretty much constantly. And that maybe that's just me, but I always, you know, I have a hard time like going to a music festival and you don't know anyone and you're just going to sit and watch in a crowd of people who don't know anyone
either.
And
buy a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. And that's like your worth. It's like, well, are you going to buy a t-shirt or not?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
So. Yeah, well, you know, and I... As a person, I don't think, like, I think a lot of people listen to me talk and might think that I'm anti-money or something. And the truth is I don't think it's about being anti-money. I think it's about deciding whether or not we want to value money more than anything else, which is currently what we do. Where if,
all right.
If we want to think more critically about it and say, hey, there are things that are just as valuable, if not more valuable than money. And those things are...
We got a call.
We got a caller. Those things are community and et cetera. Genuine human interaction. So,
All right. I'm going to try and do this right because I haven't really put it.
All right, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. Oh, I have to be on the air?
Yes, you do.
I already know. I already recognize this voice.
Hi.
Hi, Mom.
No way. Hi, Mom.
Hey, I just called to...
Did you just want to say you love me, Mom? I love you too. That's really sweet. Do you have an important question for us while we're on the air?
Well, I have a couple things. One, I was just going to ask you about, you know, you were mentioning your trip out west.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to see my mom too.
That's what day are you going to be there? Because she kind of needs to know.
Oh, yeah. Will you pick me up?
Actually, I have a good question for you that's unrelated to our relationship.
Okay.
And that is, maybe you could tell us about one of your favorite experiences serving tea.
One of my favorite experiences? That's a really good question. Do you want... Man, there's so many. I mean, I think just life. But I guess maybe it would be appropriate to tell, you know, kind of the story of how I started serving tea. Because honestly, serving tea was, I mean, maybe from a personal standpoint, my personal favorite thing. I always like to say that the most medicinal quality of tea is that it cures loneliness. And that's because that's what I experienced in my life when I discovered the power of making tea for free. And you've heard this story, Mom, so yeah, sorry to hear. Sorry to hear it again.
Maybe somebody else would like to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, so I kind of briefly mentioned before that I was living in Los Angeles in my pickup truck. All my interactions revolved around profit maximization. They weren't genuine. So somehow I ended up going down to Hollywood Boulevard after work, and I just started going down there and cooking dinner on my tailgate, cooking a little bit extra, you know, because that was my kitchen. And inevitably people, you know, Hollywood Boulevard is extremely eclectic. You have everyone from, you know, gutter punk street kids to Japanese tourists, thugged out dudes from South Central. I mean, you name it, you've got movie stars. And so, you know, I just started cooking my dinner down there, and inevitably people would stop and ask what I was doing. What is this? Why are you cooking here? Say, well, I'm cooking dinner. This is my kitchen. Would you care to join me? And a lot of times people would stop to eat. Sometimes people would just stop to chat. And to keep those interactions going after dinner, I would just put the kettle on and make tea. And I think that it kind of stemmed from growing up going to, you know, these music campouts where the community was
revolved around the tailgate and the Coleman stove and the camp chairs. And that's where you had these genuine non-monetary interactions. And those are also, that's also where people jammed and played music as well. But, and so it was so cool because I literally had gutter punk street kids sitting with college professors and Japanese tourists with, you know, gangster dudes from South Central. And of course, this is my favorite story because I was no longer lonely and I was having those genuine human interactions and that community. And I started having regulars and people that, you know, pretty soon were like, hey, we're going to be serving tea again. Hey, it's the tea man. Hey, tea guy. And so, I mean, I guess that's probably just from a personal standpoint, maybe one of my favorite stories because it changed my life and completely changed the direction of my life in wanting to create something that is, you know, a little bit more genuine and,
like the creation myth of the T-Bus.
It created the T-Bus.
That's a great
your favorite son.
Don't tell your brother.
I hope he's not listening.
Well, thank you.
thanks for calling, Mom.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
San Juan Island.
Oh, what's it like right now? Just tell us one thing about where you are.
The sun is shining, the cherry tree's starting to bloom, the frogs are starting to make their springtime sounds, and the birds are starting to make their springtime sounds.
I bet it smells so good out there.
Yeah, it does. It's beautiful right now. And it snowed this morning, but it smells
really?
All right. Well, it was 79 degrees here today.
Wow. I have a fire going.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Oh, well, thanks for calling.
Well, I'll let you go.
Love you, Mom.
Thank you. Love you, too. Bye.
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 All right, I did it.
That was sweet.
Yeah, that was sweet. That was a good story, too. It's a good story because I do feel like when you feel lonely, I think I have something on here. Okay. Yeah, when you feel lonely, it can be so hard to figure out how to get yourself out of that hole because I think we have a pretty lonely society here. We're pretty much, it's pretty easy to get lonely and to get, you know, to derail.
Yeah.
And when that happens to you, it can be really hard to figure out what to do. That's a really nice story.
Yeah. And I think it's really important for us to remember that, you know, that we, even though we're taught that we need to live in these separate boxes and that we need to maximize profit at every turn and angle, that really when we're lonely, the simple act of sharing, even though it puts us in the position of like trying to fulfill a need, you know, like when we're lonely, we're trying to fulfill a need. And I don't believe that humans are innately greedy once our basic needs are met, but we have this basic need that we don't talk about, which is genuine human interactions and community. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a downward spiral almost where you don't have genuine human interactions. You're going to want to act out of self-interest more, and you're going to want to try to do more to like for yourself. And we've perpetuated this myth that first you need to take care of yourself and then you can start working on outside yourself. When in reality, one of our basic needs is community, and having community and working on ourselves go hand in hand. And that we actually have a lot of our basic needs provided by our community. And we really need to focus on both if we want to, I think, become better people and have better communities. That's my point of view, at least.
I really like that. I really like that. And it takes the heat off of yourself too. Like if you're like, what's wrong with me? You know, don't think of it that way. Reach out, you know, do something for other people. And before you know it, you're kind of cycling around in a real positive way.
Yeah.
Where you feel good. You feel great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big goal for me really, is to bust this myth of self-interest and that, and that's actually going to make you happy.
I know you would have a lot to say about this, but I have to introduce what's your take on cell phones and, you know, the introversion that comes with it.
Well, I think that a lot of the reason that we really like cell phones culturally is because humans, I mean, this is the same with drugs. And there's been some studies that have shown that the reason that humans become addicted to drugs is because we need bonds. We like to create bonds. And if we aren't having those bonds with other human beings, that we create those bonds with drugs or in this case, cell phones and screen time. And it's much easier to create a bond and to feel elated by a notification on your phone,
than it is to actually participate in a relationship. And so it's a lot easier for us to get caught up in those mm-hmm. things. Not to say that phones aren't great tools and, you know, sure. that I don't use social media, myself, but I do think that it's all stems from this basic human need of needing bonds and connections and traditionally, which was, you know, of course, fulfilled by relationships with people.
Right. Right. Like you don't want to feel, I feel like it's, you're afraid of being left out. Like I think phones kind of satisfy that in a very superficial way, but yeah. then you actually are left out constantly because you're at dinner with your friends, but instead of talking to them, yeah, you're yeah. looking at your phone because yeah. someone else, somewhere else might do something interesting.
I think the phone thing is really interesting. In the last year, really, I have been getting more and more questions about phones. People are, I think this issue is starting to become more and more, you know, we're starting to rethink phones more and more. Like we've gotten to the point with smartphones where, you know, I don't know how long they've been around.
Not 10 years.
Not even a decade. No. So we're just settling into them. And so I think we're really trying to feel out what is healthy and what is not with our devices.
I think that's interesting what you say, because I suspect that more and more people are feeling discontent with their relationships.
Yeah.
With their phones, when at first it was like a honeymoon and it was so great and we let it into every moment of our day and evening and bedtime. And now people are realizing the disadvantages of doing that. Yeah. And but we're all struggling with what to do about it.
Yeah.
Because now we actually have to kind of backtrack a little. Anyway.
Yeah, I've been just trying to limit my phone time by, you know, unplugging. And it's been really nice where I've been staying. There's no internet. Mm-hmm. I still have internet on my phone, but I don't have like super solid access, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes it's just about putting it down, unplugging it, turning it off, and saying you're going to spend a few hours or a day or a couple days. I know, that look on your face. I don't know.
I know. Well,
yeah.
My kids now are 11 and 13, and I'm just, you know, we're just trying to navigate this. I'm so thankful that they were not born into a world with cell phones, like smartphones, because yeah. I watch really young kids now. And yeah. I mean, who could blame a parent? It's like yeah. really hard to get a 2-year-old to yeah. sit still. But man, you hand them that phone, it's like gold.
Yeah.
But it's not. You know, you're missing so much. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll just have to see how this plays out.
I think we just need to make more cups of tea and play more music.
I like the way you're talking. So yeah. great.
Yeah, I have to say that cell phone is pretty indispensable for the traveling that I do.
Oh, it's, yeah.
It does make a lot of things a lot easier. And I think as a tool, it's, I mean, I am so thankful and grateful, but.
Right, you're so quickly connected when you come to a new place in a way that great yeah. things happen.
Yeah.
You know, things will be like, yeah. you'll run into people in the street that you ran into somewhere else,
yeah.
but you can kind of like help it along yeah. a little.
Yeah.
If well, they can call you.
And even for me, it's like, I run waste vegetable oil and as a fuel, and I have to shut off a mile before I get somewhere. And so using navigation, I know when I'm a mile before I'm going to get somewhere that I've never been. And so there's all kinds of things like that. I'm also, I'm going to admit something here on the air, which might scare some people.
Okay.
I'm a really, really avid dumpster diver. And so anytime I come somewhere, I'm mapping out all the grocery stores, the natural food stores.
Yeah.
Man, I love using these devices to undermine the system. That's kind of my,
right.
or to like, you know, do the thing that I find more morally valid.
Yeah. Well, I obviously think, I mean, dumpster diving, what can you say about that? That's just brilliant, because give me a break. You're throwing it away already. So
yeah.
that's yeah. awesome that you do that. Yeah. It's the ultimate recycling.
Yep. It really is. It's even, yeah, it's, you know, we throw away 30 to 40% of our food every day in this country. So
we had a woman here who had a potluck at one of the buildings here. I won't use any, I'll try not to use any names, but she served this potluck up and everyone ate and had a great time and it was so awesome.
By the way.
And then at the end she's like, I just want you to know everything you just ate came out of a dumpster.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, I'm more of a fan of telling people beforehand and
it giving, is nice. That is
giving
nice.
Them a choice, but I do think it's important for people to experience really beautiful dumpster dive meals because I think a lot of people have this stereotype of it, like a homeless guy eating a half-eaten burger out of a trash can, and that's what they think of as dumpster diving, when in reality most dumpster diving is like taking
you know, a slightly bruised or, you know, day expired cheese or, you know, whatever it is, eggs where one egg broke in the dozen and throwing it, you know, it's been thrown in the trash. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, and of course, for what you do, for what you are doing at this point in your life, that also perpetuates your
totally
your life. Like you can keep going yeah. longer if you are willing to live off the excess of America.
Yeah.
And trust totally. Me, there's plenty.
Yeah, there really is. And it's a direct relationship too. So it ties into the whole, you know, having relationships with the things you use and consume.
Yeah.
Idea. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
It's been great talking to you. I've really enjoyed this. I want to just talk a little bit more about your bus.
Okay.
Okay. So it looks like a ship in there. It's so beautiful. If you guys haven't gotten to see the bus, you should get online and look at pictures, or when Giuseppe comes back, you know, we'll have to have, well, I mean, obviously yeah. we'll have more events. It's just so cool. It looks so great. It's like rounded out and there's a little stove and, you know, it's got everything you need in there.
It's all like, I mean, it's all, since it's all salvaged wood, it's every piece of wood has character, you know, everything was part of something else to begin with. And there's a lot of brass and copper and old, you know, plumbing for railings, and it's got a old, you know, cute little cast iron wood stove.
How did you make your ceiling? Where you bowed the wood?
That's this really ugly faux wood paneling. That's the backside. So it's like, that was in my brother's house. I helped him do a little bit of remodel in there and pulled out and used the backside, which is not the side you're supposed to see. But it's really thin ply, but I set my skill saw for like a 16th inch deep, and I basically scored every half an inch on the tight radius of the ceiling so that to allow it to bend a little bit.
Oh, okay.
I tried making a teapot powered steamer for bending the plywood, but it didn't quite work.
Yeah, you need the YouTube instructional on that
yeah.
one. That would be great.
Yeah.
Keep working on that one.
Yeah, I'll try.
Maybe you can perfect that before your book comes out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Dale, the next DJ is here. And so we're going to sign off. Giuseppe, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. I can't wait till you come back. And we should have a mad tea party.
Okay, let's do it.
I mean, not like angry, just like with just really
insane.
Big hats. if we did it on Derby Day, we should see when that is, because that's in April sometime. And that's when all the ladies go to the horse racing track with their big huge hats on and
oh man,
look really outlandish. I don't know where you could serve tea around Oaklawn, but that would just about be amazing. That would be perfect. All right, we'll work on that.
Okay, we'll work on it.
Safe travels till we see you next time.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
KUHS is underwritten by the David Saraceni Foundation in support of converting photons into gluten-free music, commentary, and information. Thanks, David, for your continued commitment to community radio.